Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 72, the slaying of the demon Jarasandha, text 7. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Your decision is perfect, O King, and thus your noble fame will spread to all the worlds, O tormentor of your enemies." Purport. Lord Krishna here concurs with King Yudhisthira's decision that the Rajasuya sacrifice should be performed. The Lord further agrees that there is nothing unfair in the fact that one result is achieved by those who worship him and another by those who do not. The great Bhagavatam commentators point out that by addressing King Yudhisthira as Shatrugharjuna, tormentor of enemies, Lord Krishna is imparting to him the potency to conquer all the enemy kings. Thus, Krishna predicted that King Yudhisthira's noble fame would spread to all the worlds, and in fact it has. Om Ajnana Chamanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Maritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Govinda Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is speaking, replying to Yudhisthira Maharaj's presentation that the Rajasuya Yajna should be performed to clearly establish Krishna's glories, Krishna's supremacy, and to clearly establish that there is a difference in the results of endeavors when you serve Krishna and when you do not. Yudhisthira Maharaj, as a most magnanimous executive head, wanted to make sure all the people can see this point. Why? So that they can properly use their independence. Our minute independence is the crux of our situation. How we use our minute independence determines whether we live in the spiritual world or the material world. So Yudhisthira Maharaj wants to do the greatest welfare work by making it clear to everyone what happens when, with your minute independence, you choose this way or that way. There are unequal results to this equality. Krishna, as we spoke yesterday, is equal to all. Samaham sarvabhuteshu. He's equipoised and equal to all living entities. That means everyone has a chance to choose the best thing. Once you make your choice, though, you're going to get unequal results. But that doesn't mean Krishna is unequal, because you had the equal chance to choose the best way. It's like Krishna is the supreme and most perfect equal opportunity employer. Now, once you get the job, so to speak, then it's up to you how you perform. And we all know that people at workplaces perform differently, unequally. So we cannot be confused by the unequal results and the equal opportunity for perfection. The ball is in your court, the choice is in your hands. Why do we say minute independence? Maybe you've sometimes worried or thought about that. Minute means because you are part and parcel of Krishna. Mamaivamsho jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. You have everything that Krishna has, generally speaking, but only to a tiny degree. Therefore, your tiny independence can get you into trouble. Whereas Krishna's independence never gets him into trouble. And furthermore, your tiny independence, how much can it do? You can desire that much you can do. But once you desire, then you enter into particular situations as arranged by the super soul in your heart. And you have to take the consequences. Your possibilities are limited in material life. Therefore, it's said that you have minute independence. The best way to understand this minute independence is to think of jumping into a mad rushing river. I don't know about Australia, but in New Zealand they have many rushing rivers, and tourists like to go white river water rafting. And they get into these rubber boats, and they put on helmets and wetsuits, and they go down a rushing stream over rocks and all sorts of things. And meanwhile, they're looking at the stunning scenery. Sometimes the boat overturns and they're thrown in the water. That's all part of the fun. But sometimes someone dies. But every 2 years, a tourist dies. It doesn't stop the tourists, though. They sign a disclaimer that if anything happens on this boat trip, we don't hold the company responsible. So every 2 years, someone dies. Now, how does anyone get into that situation to be in a rubber boat on a mad rushing river? They choose. But then what happens? Once you make your choice, the river carries you away. So your independence cannot cover or cannot arrange all the circumstances that you're going to encounter on that river. So similarly, once you choose the illusory energy, you are carried away. And the rest is just detail, fine print, whatever happens to you in material existence. That's why the Shastra doesn't really pay so much attention to the details of material choices. And from the pure devotional standpoint, the Acharyas dismiss the variegatedness of material choice. Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, Kevala Visharabanda. Whether it's even the choice to be a Gyani, but to speak of a choice to be a Karmi, a fruitive worker, karmic worker, all are pots of poison, the Acharya said. We don't make a big deal about your choices within the mode of passion. But material life means, yes, it's a big thing to you. Should I go to this restaurant to eat out or that restaurant? You can see it on Swanson Street and in the CBD of Melbourne on a Friday night. People are alive with the possibility of making a choice. Let's go to this restaurant. Let's eat out here. Let's eat out there. Shall we go to this club and wait online to get inside? Or shall we go to another club and wait outside online to get inside? Let's go shopping, retail therapy. Shall we get this product or that product? What do you think? We better go on the internet, investigate, check out all the reviews. Okay, that one. So we make a big deal out of these things. Oh, the mode of passion has struck me. I'm in the mood for lust. Who will it be? We make such a big deal out of these choices. But from the viewpoint of the spiritual platform, such choices are very insignificant. The main choice has already been made. Karnam gunasangasya sadasadyonijanusya. The main choice that has been made is, I shall associate with the modes of material nature. That is the main choice. Once that choice is made, the rest is history, so to speak. Once you dive into the mode of passion and ignorance, then all the qualities of those modes infuse your heart. You have to understand that. It's not that you'll dally with passion, a little bit of ignorance. Forgetfulness never harmed anyone. It's not that you dally in that way and there are no deep effects. No. The danger of gunasanga, associating with the modes of material nature, is that those modes invade your heart and consciousness. And that is a disaster. So whether you choose to respond to the mode of passion this way or that way is not really important. But we make such a big deal out of this. Our sense gratification has to proceed very nicely, and it's such a crucial decision whether we shall respond to Rajagun in this way or respond to Rajagun in that way. We make such a big deal out of it. Whereas from the viewpoint of the pure devotional platform, this is all considered trivial. Therefore, what does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Prakate kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasa ahankara vimutatma. The fool thinks, with my independence, I'm making so many amazing and immense choices. But no. Kataham iti manyate. Regardless of what you think, the actual cause is association with material nature. You think you're the doer. You think, with my powerful, immense independence, I have chosen this. But simply, you have jumped into the mad rushing stream of material existence and you're being swept away. So all you can say is, I chose to associate with the modes of material nature. The rest is history. That's why Krishna says, ahamkara vimutatma. Due to your false ego, you think you're the big doer. In this way, we show ourselves to be fools. And Krishna uses the word vimudha, meaning not ordinary fool, but super fool. The super fool thinks, look at my choices. I have chosen to take my vacation to Bali rather than go to Thailand this year. And all your friends, tell us about it. Yeah, you should have variety. You should see different cultures. You should see how different people live. That's always the excuse for traveling, right? We want to see different cultures and see how other people live. So, we should take Lord Krishna's words very seriously. And then we can understand this illusion about the scope of our independence. You simply can choose which river to jump into. Do you jump into the illusory river of Maya? Or do you jump into the stream of devotional service? Once you jump into the stream of devotional service, the internal potency, you're also swept along. And that is the devotee's prayer, just like Queen Kunti. Just like the Ganga flows incessantly toward the ocean, so Krishna, may my consciousness ever flow towards you. Gange vo gambhavastu. This is the extent of our independence. So that choice of which rushing river we'll jump into, that's a big choice. The rest is incidental. If you choose Krishna, you'll be swept away by Krishna's all-attractiveness. And if you choose illusion, you'll be swept away by the hallucinations of Maya. So therefore, we say minute independence. You cannot fulfill your own desires. Krishna fulfills his own desires. You can't. All you can do is desire, and then you have to depend on the super soul in the heart for arranging for you to try out your foolish desires. We are in this world because the super soul is fulfilling our desire to enjoy in the material world. It's very difficult for us sometimes to accept the blame for being here. As soon as we get sick, or there's some tragedy happens to our body, someone else's body, in our minds, someone else's mind who's dear to us, immediately we want to lash out at Krishna. Why did you let this happen? I've been chanting Hare Krishna. I've been doing a bit of devotional service most of the time. You let this happen? Why do I have family problems? Where is my heaven on earth? We develop an attitude, consciously or unconsciously. Where's my dream boat? Where is my perfect situation in this world? It's a great step forward that we accept the blame for being here. Krishna, it's true, fulfilled our desire, but we desired. Now, the little, how do we say, issue that's going on here behind the scenes in this talk between Yudhisthira and Lord Krishna is that, as the acharyas point out, Krishna, he's sensitive. And he was a little concerned. If you so publicly broadcast the difference in results obtained by one who serves me and one who doesn't, won't that make me look partial, partisan, and unequal? Krishna, he's concerned, you know, that people could feel this way. It's true that I am impartial, but if you just make such a prominent display of the difference in results obtained by the devotee and the non-devotee, it could increase the misunderstanding that I am partial. See, Krishna's a person. He has concerns. Just like in the case of our tiny existences, we may be concerned, if I act in such a way, what will others think? Of course, although Krishna is sensitive in this way, he's not hung up, so to speak. He doesn't get on the mental platform. He just expresses his sensitivity, that's all. You see, when Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Doyam, Yome Bhaktya Priyashtiti, you can offer me a leaf, fruit, flower, or water. It's not that Krishna needs that. He is self-sufficient in of himself. But by your offering him something, you benefit. That's all. And Krishna wants you to benefit. But he doesn't need your offering, whether it's $1 billion or a cup of milk. He doesn't need it. But he likes to taste devotion. Therefore, someone who has $10 billion and gives $1 billion to Krishna can be less valued than someone who just has a little bit of money and gives everything. In Chaitanya Lila, you know the example of Kolavacha Sridhar. So poor, selling banana leaf cups to make a living and barely surviving, using half of what he earned, which is very, very tiny for devotional purposes. He had a rusty water pot with holes in it that he would drink water from. And Lord Chaitanya personally came to drink from that water pot, although Kolavacha Sridhar tried to stop him. Lord Chaitanya saw the immense wealth of bhakti in Kolavacha Sridhar. So it is not that Krishna needs our offering, but we benefit by giving to Krishna. And it's not that Krishna, shall we say, is forced to come under the control of his devotees. No, he just likes to. There's a big difference. He likes to accept his devotees' offerings. He likes to become subservient to his pure devotees. It's all just a pleasurable, voluntary activity. That's why we say lila, voluntary pastimes. So don't misunderstand when you hear that Krishna is controlled by his devotees' love. He voluntarily agrees to be in that situation because he likes it. He doesn't have to do anything. He's swasukhanubhuti. He's packed up with his own happiness. We don't know what that's like, packed up with our own happiness. He never goes outside of himself to enjoy. He never depends on others outside of himself because everything is his energy. But we are always forced in our endeavors to be happy in this world, to rely upon others, to depend on others, because we're incomplete. We can't find that happiness within ourselves because we're not swasukhanubhuti. Our happiness is simply in relationship to Krishna. Remember the famous story of a news reporter. I'll tell it for Badahari's benefit because many of you have heard it before. News reporters were interviewing Srila Prabhupada here in Melbourne, and a few of them were unfavorable and writing kind of the nasty articles they used to write back in the early 70s when Krishna consciousness was new in Australia. Of course, now they write very nice articles. So, after a string of these unfavorable reporters who were looking to write something weird, another reporter came and he presented himself to Srila Prabhupada and said, I've seen those other articles and I want to write something that's fair. And so I've come here to talk to you. And I promise you, I will write something that reflects the great work that you all are doing. Now you might think, upon hearing that, Srila Prabhupada would immediately become very, oh, thank you so much for attempting, wanting to write something nice about you, and so on and so forth. And there's nothing wrong with that. And certainly the devotees were thinking like that. Oh, finally you get a good reporter. Oh, let's give this guy a maha plate, you know. let's give him so much attention and compliment him, even flatter him. But when the man, the reporter, made his presentation of wanting to write a fair article, and he presented himself in actually a humble and gentlemanly way, what did Srila Prabhupada see? That's right. He didn't miss the opportunity. Oh, yeah. So you're going to write a nice article. Well, let me ask you some questions. Man didn't even get a chance to ask any questions yet. Tell me, what is the goal of life? And the reporter, I've come here to inquire of you. No. What is the goal of life? You tell me. And the man, but no. The man again protested that I'm just an ordinary person, you know. You're the guru. And Brahma said, no, you be guru. You tell me. What is the goal of life? And the man couldn't escape, and so he thought, what is the goal of life? The goal of life, and he said it very thoughtfully and sincerely, the goal of life, my goal of life is to find happiness within myself. You can imagine all the devotees nodding their heads. Pious. Candidate for self-realization. Yeah, find happiness within yourself. Yeah, that's why we're all here. As soon as he said that, the goal in life is to find happiness within myself. What does Srila Prabhupada say? That is dog's happiness. Prabhupada demonstrating, preaching according to time and place. The Aussies take it straight on. So... That is dog's happiness. Everyone was astonished. What's wrong with trying to find happiness within yourself? I mean, isn't that kind of, you know, that means you're spiritual. That means, you know, you're cut above the rest of the people, you know. The Prabhupada just shot it down. That is dog's happiness. And then he explained, the dog is also finding happiness within himself. When he barks, he's finding happiness within himself. This way, Prabhupada was giving insight into material nature. But the animals are actually finding happiness within themselves. When I heard that, then I started observing nature. You can watch the birds. They actually, when they soar through the sky, they're finding happiness within themselves. And the fish, if you have an aquarium, you see the fish, or you go to the dentist or doctor's office, sometimes they have aquariums. The fish all day long, all night. They're finding happiness within themselves. So, Srila Prabhupada pointed out that the goal of life is not to find happiness within yourself. Why? Because as long as you are within this material world, you cannot be happy. Therefore, the goal of life is to get out of the material world and then talk about happiness. See, Prabhupada just totally rewired the guy's presentation and thinking. As long as there's birth, death, disease, and old age, how can you be happy? He wanted the man to understand that. Krishna easily finds happiness within himself. He doesn't depend on others. Let's look at the friend and enemy situation. Yesterday's verse said, Yudhisthira Maharaj said, within your mind, there can be no such differentiation as this one is mine and that's another's, because you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, the soul of all beings, always equipoised and enjoying transcendental happiness within yourself. So, someone is your enemy because they threaten your sense gratification. They threaten your quest for happiness. And someone is your friend, why? Because they help you to be happy. They help you in your quest for happiness. So based on our insufficiencies, our incompleteness, we brand this living entity as a friend, that one as an enemy. It's all based on our sense gratification. Krishna doesn't need to depend on anyone for anything. Therefore, what is the question of friends or enemies for Krishna? You fear your enemies. What are they going to do to me? What are they talking about me? How are they trying to give me a hard time? Krishna doesn't fear his enemies. And you feel, how do you say, appreciation for your friends, because they help you in your quest to live peacefully in the material world. You have to answer the phone every time? Are you the official phone answer? Better sit than listen to class. Friends and enemies mean that means I'm incomplete. I have to rely on others. But Krishna says, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu. I'm equal to all. I actually have no friends, no enemies. Then how is it that some become enemies of Krishna? They choose to be so. But the fact is, even the enemies of Krishna benefit. Any way you contact Krishna, you'll benefit. So even the enemies of the Lord, when they're killed by him, they get to merge into the Brahmajyoti. And in special cases, special demons, like Shishupal, Dantavakra, who are so much absorbed in inimical feelings to Krishna, personally inimical feelings, they actually go through the Ramana effulgence and go to Vaikuntha. But these are very special demons. They're so absorbed in meditating on Krishna in enmity and anger that because they're meditating on Krishna, they get the result of attaining Krishna. Very special demons, though. And of course, Shishupal and Dantavakra, they start out as Jai and Vijay in Vaikuntha. Still, Narada Muni, he comments in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, look at the intensity that these demons have in their bhava. If only I had such intense bhava favorably for Krishna, I can't compare to their intensity. You see, a devotee is always looking at the intensity of devotional service. We don't want to give Krishna feeble offerings. We don't want to give Krishna haphazard service, whimsical service. We want to be very concerned with the intensity of our devotion. And it is not that Krishna is partial because he appreciates the intensity of a devotee's devotion. Because everyone has an equal chance to render intense, favorable devotional service to the Lord. Right before Hiranyakashipu tried his final time to kill Prahlad by cutting off his head with his sword, he accused Prahlad, "You're siding with my enemies." And Prahlad told him that, "Father, your asura bhava, your demoniac nature is just getting way out there. Don't you know that friends and enemies are a mental creation?" And furthermore, although many great conquerors have defeated everyone in all 10 directions, their life was unsuccessful because they hadn't controlled their own mind. The only actual enemy in this world is our own mind. The uncontrolled mind is the enemy. Based on the uncontrolled mind, you imagine, this one's my enemy, this one's my friend. All that is just a manifestation of a problematic mind. So, my dear father, please do not make this artificial discrimination. This one is a friend, this one's an enemy. Because by doing so, you're revealing your defective mind, your uncontrolled mind. We should think about that. How our mind creates these distinctions based on who is near and dear and who is far from our sense gratification. Balaram Maharaj gave his father such good advice. And what did his father say? His father showed that you may give the best of advice to a devious person, and that best advice will simply increase the venom of such a snake. Hiranyakashipu didn't say, "Oh, my dear boy, actually you've got a good point there." No, he took it as a challenge to what? His false ego. Prahlad, are you trying to imply that you have higher knowledge than me? Are you trying to imply that you're better at controlling the senses than me? That was how he took it. In the Sanskrit, when Hiranyakashipu replies like this, he's called Sri Hiranyakashipu. Why is Hiranyakashipu so auspicious that he should be called Sri Hiranyakashipu? It's because of two reasons. Number one, he's got a son like Prahlad Maharaj. Therefore, in spite of his Asarika Bhava, his intense demoniac nature, he has Prahlad Maharaj, such a dear devotee of the Lord, as his son. And number two, why is he called Sri Hiranyakashipu? Because he's going to be killed by Lord Nrisingadeva. How auspicious. He's going to lay on the lap of Lord Nrisingadeva and have his intestines ripped out. Therefore, Sri Hiranyakashipu. There was this concern in the presentation by Yudhisthira that some people would not understand the Lord's partiality and impartiality. But this concern was resolved, and Krishna now says, Samyad vyavasitam rajan bhavata shatrikarshana kayani yena te kirtir lokan anubhavishyati. Your decision is perfect, O King. We always want that our actions are approved. This is a symptom of a Vaishnava. Not that, well, I decided to do this, and that's the way it's going to be. I've consulted my intuition. I've been perfectly new agey. No, a Vaishnava always seeks permission, just like is demonstrated by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He got the permission, blessings of the Vaishnavas, of the deity, for leaving for Vrindavan. And we spoke yesterday about Shukadeva Goswami's approval of Pritchard Maharaj's question, Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Harish Charitamadputa. Your question is excellent, Maharaj, and it causes an explosion of Krishna Katha, talks about the inconceivable pastimes of Lord Hari. And here we see the Lord himself is saying, your decision is perfect, O King. This is the kind of feedback that we want. It's a very essential part of devotee sangha that you leave yourself open to feedback. And you learn so many things that way. And you can prevent yourself from getting into complicated situations. Your decision is perfect, O King, and thus your noble fame will spread to all the world, so tormentor of the enemies. Just see how Krishna is. He's not saying, this will spread my fame. He's saying to his dear devotee, your fame will spread. This is reciprocation. The devotee is thinking how to please Krishna, how to glorify Krishna. And Krishna is thinking how to glorify the devotee. There's actually a competition between the Lord and his devotee. The devotee is thinking, oh, Krishna has done so much for me. I must do something more for Krishna. And Krishna is thinking, my devotee has done so much for me. I must do something more for my devotee. This is eternal competition. Now, where can you find that kind of relationship in the material world? What's the usual tendency in material relationships? Well, you did something good for me, and yeah, you're supposed to. And meanwhile, what have you done for me lately? That's always the point, you know? You did something for me, but that was a while back. What about now? Maybe you all have, some of you have memories of being lashed in this way in relationships. You haven't done anything for me lately! So, generally the tendency is, you do something nice for someone and you think, okay, that's it. I've made my investment into the bank account. As the relationship books say, you should always invest in relationships, make a deposit in the bank account. I made my deposit, that's it for the year. Now I sit back and wait for the yield. I did something nice for you, that's it for the next few months. Now what are you going to do to reciprocate? Whenever I'm talking, especially to preaching to people under 30 or under 35, and naturally these days, if they're not from India, that means they've been through, you know, quite a few relationships already. And the relationships break, of course. And I ask them, so what happened? Why did your relationship break? This latest one, why did it break? And often they say, you know, I was thinking about the relationship, and I found that I was giving more than I was getting. They say it with deep seriousness. You know, I just wasn't getting back what I was putting in. I mean, you know, this is a Shastra conjunction. We'll only be satisfied by an eternally ever fresh and ever increasing relationship. Only Krishna can offer that. And Krishna competes with his devotee. The devotee competes with Krishna. Who can do more? This goes on eternally. Krishna thinks, I haven't done enough for my devotee. The devotee thinks, I haven't done enough for Krishna. This is what goes on in the spontaneous rushing stream of the internal potency. So, you see Krishna's reciprocation to Yudhishthira Maharaja's proposal. Your decision is perfect, O King, and your fame will spread all over the world. And, as we find out in the purport, by the Lord saying, Shatru Karshana, O tormentor of your enemies, he's empowering Yudhishthira with the potency to establish his perfect regime all over the world. We want to be empowered by Krishna in whatever service we're doing for him. We want to be able to do service so that Krishna's attention is captured. Just like little children always want to catch the attention of the parent, we want to catch the attention of Krishna by the quality of our service. Krishna responds to a devotee according to that quality of service. Therefore, even in the devotee world, there's differentiation. Krishna responds more to this devotee because that devotee's quality of service is sweeter. Sometimes, the issue of enemies of Krishna is puzzling. And Yudhishthira Maharaj himself was a bit puzzled when Rajasuya Yajna, as you'll see, it's coming. Yudhishthira is going to have a ringside seat and see Krishna kill Shishupal. And Yudhishthira is going to then see, in the accompaniment of all the people at the Rajasuya Yajna, he's going to see Shishupal's spirit soul leave his dead body and enter. Merge into the Supreme Absolute Truth. As described in the 7th canto of Bhagavatam, Yudhishthira is going to turn to Narada Muni, who's also present at the Rajasuya Yajna, and ask, I don't understand what's going on. This was a demon. How could he merge into the Lord? This is very puzzling to me. And Yudhisthira Maharaj is going to describe that my intelligence is now like a flame, a candle flame blowing in the wind, flickering, because of what I've seen. It's quite amazing. How could such a demon merge into the Lord? And then Narada Muni is going to explain to him, number one, in general, how demons who are killed by the Lord get a special destination. And number two, he's going to explain the history of Jaya and Vijaya. Once again, it's there in the third canto, and Narada Muni will comment upon it in the seventh canto. Yes, what Krishna does requires help to understand. Even Yudhisthira was amazed by what he saw. When you hear the parampara explanations of what Krishna does and why, then you have the ticket to go back to Godhead in your hand. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvata chakka deham panajama naiti mameti sorjuna. Krishna makes his offer if you can understand the mystery of my transcendental appearance in this world. If you can understand my activities, then upon giving up the present body, you won't take another material body. Now, what other person can give you such a reward for your trying to understand that person? Everyone wants understanding. They demand understanding. But do you get that kind of reward? The whole world, especially Kali Yuga, is based on misunderstanding. If you actually succeed in understanding someone, what's the result? You get a few minutes of peace. Or on the international level, a few years of so-called peace. That's it. And then again, turmoil and fighting and anger and lust and greed. But if you simply try to understand Krishna, you get the supreme reward. All right, we'll stop here and ask for any questions. Achintya Rupa, you're back. Yes.
Maharaj, can the soul really merge to the Supreme Soul? Because soul is always separate eternally. How do we understand this enigma?
Krishna can manage that. He has a facility for that, but he doesn't recommend it. The Brahma Jyoti is actually composed of the shininess of the Brahma Jyoti is actually composed of individual jivas. They just enter a state of merging. But they can't be satisfied with that because it's not their constitutional position. Therefore, generally, they fall down, as Lord Brahma has testified. Aruya kuchchena param param tada patantyado nandita yushvanangriya. They haven't taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet, therefore they fall down, in spite of severe austerities and penances to merge into the Lord. Krishna is offering all facilities. You want to merge? Okay. He doesn't recommend it, but the facility is there. But it's not your constitutional position. Sometimes those who merge, they go through to the spiritual world, the special demons.
Like Putna.
Other times, generally, a statement is made in the Shastra, generally they fall down again. I've explained it. In the marketplace of spirituality in the world today, you may meet someone who claims that I'm perfectly enlightened, that previously I was merged in the Supreme Absolute Truth. I was one with the Absolute Truth. But then I felt compassion and I came down to this world to start my mission. So you have to ask that person, that so-called spiritual teacher, if you were perfectly merged in the void or whatever you want to call it, this Brahman, the oneness, how could you feel compassion? Because compassion always involves another person, at least. Ask them that and watch them squirm. Compassion is an interpersonal thing. If you were perfectly merged in the oneness, how could you feel compassion? What felt compassion for who? Anything else? Yes?
You said that Krishna responds to a devotee according to the quality of their sins.
Isn't that what he says in Bhagavad Gita? Yayatam mam prapajante? As you treat him, he treats you? Okay.
And you mentioned particularly the quality of sweetness that we should aspire to achieve. What about effort?
Isn't effort sweet when you try your best to please Krishna? Once again, I have to give practical, down-to-earth examples so you can see the matter clearly. Otherwise, you have a tendency to make Krishna so, Yes, Krishna is inconceivable and beyond the reach of our senses, but we shouldn't put bhakti yoga, make it so that who can cope with it, who can understand it. To a certain extent, you can understand it. To a certain extent, you can understand Krishna. So, effort is sweet, that you try your best. Suppose, in your younger days, someone worked for you day and night, struggled so hard to get everything you wanted. What would you say? That's sweet. Right? You sit back in your big house, surrounded by maid servants, as the person just worked hard day and night, made such an effort, you would be pleased. Ooh, this is very sweet. So Krishna is the same way. Even more so, Krishna's pleasure upon the devotee. There's nothing in the material world that compares to that. When Krishna glances over you, it makes all the austerities you went through in serving him seem so insignificant. Just one glance by Krishna upon you. When the deities glance over you, everything becomes worthwhile. I was speaking to Aniruddha Prabhu yesterday about how after a marathon, you can always see the difference in a temple. It's like everyone's minds are just washed clean. All complexities have disappeared. It's like when you wash marble very nicely, it shines, it glistens. Similarly, after a marathon, the minds are just glistening fresh. Sarvatma snapanam param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The Krishna Sankirtan, Sri Krishna Sankirtan, Sarvatma snapanam. It gives a bath to the soul. The soul is pure. In one sense, the soul doesn't need a bath. But because we misidentify with matter, it can appear that the soul is materially entangled. In a dream, it's like that. So, sarvatma snapanam param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The distribution of Krishna's glories cleanses the heart. And so all the devotees, they just have such clean minds. Devoid of complexities, because they've served selflessly. In order to do a marathon properly, you have to take leave of all your hang-ups and all your worries about unfulfilled desires, and therefore you become enlivened. Those marathon efforts are very sweet. Srila Prabhupada would always comment about that. Any service that we do, if we put our hearts into it, it becomes a sweet offering. Whether it's member services, somehow or other, do something with your heart and soul to attract Krishna's attention. That is bhakti. And then as you progress in bhakti, you'll become more and more concerned. Am I giving what Krishna wants from me? Krishna will let you know as you become more and more dear to him. All right. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.